Hello everyone, welcome to another podcast session by the HISA team. As usual, what we do every Monday is we sit down and just have an overview, a discussion of how markets generally are moving. We try and just have an outlook of how markets have also opened on Monday as we prepare ourselves for what's likely to happen the next coming week. So whatever we are doing this week generally is to give you once again an overview of how markets closed last week. On Monday, what we always do, and like our show on Friday, what we do every Monday is we focus purely on the Nairobi Securities Exchange. So that's it. I'm here. I'm joined by one of our analysts, and I'll just be able to let him introduce himself as usual, and then we proceed.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Davis Kadinji, and I'm glad to be here with you this morning.
All right. Awesome, Davis. Let's get to it. Let's really start by how the markets closed last week. For a very long time, we've been seeing the NSE for the past 3 weeks. The NSE has been declining, but then last week we saw a positive turn on the NSE that starts from the All Share Index, the 25 and the 20 Share Index. I know the main thing that people are really looking into is the NSE 20 Share Index, which is always seen as a major benchmark for the most performing stocks on the NSE, also always seen to some point as an economic benchmark, but also at the same time, the All Share Index as well. So just to give guys the figures, the NSE 20 closed the week higher. It gained about 0.76 and closed the week at 1882.96 basis points. The All Share Index closed the week at 165.08. That's a 4.1% increase. At the same time, I think it would be important to just note how the markets really closed in terms of volume and turnover, where we are seeing the turnover for the NSE rise as well by about 13%, generally about 13.88%. to 2.34 billion. That's from last week turnover, where it was at the previous week turnover, where it was trading at total turnover for the week stood at 2.06 billion. Davis, just share your thoughts.
Yeah, I believe a lot of the turnover was driven by some of the results that were given out, particularly with regard to banks. So I think among the top gainers were banks such as NCBA, KCB, and the like, who announced decent results and also gave out a dividend, which was good. So I'd expect the same trend to continue up until when books closure comes. Yeah, for especially these large cap companies.
All right. At the same time, I know maybe what you're expecting. Last week, BAT closed their books. I know one of the stocks that guys were really looking into as a dividend stock was BAT. And just to share your thoughts, Davis, what would you think would happen to BAT as it goes ex-dividend today?
I'd expect the share price to dip as usual. So companies like these, a lot of individuals come in hoping to, you know, chase the dividends and then exit when, you know, they're already locked into the book, so they'll receive the dividend and then they sell off their shares. So I would expect a sell-off, but the company prospects are really good. I like the fact that they've mechanized a lot of their operations, you know. So they've really reduced the expenses, and so going forward, it seems that the company will really benefit from these cost optimization measures that they've been putting into place.
Very interesting. And just in case you're wondering, guys, I'm just checking through the HISA app today. And I can see that BAT as a company has actually dropped today. It's the top loser currently, dropping about 5.3% on market. BAT is now trading at a price of 449.75. I think that's quite a decline, considering that BAT is a fundamentally stable stock. So one of the things that I think an investor would really be timing into is at such a time, if you can get your hands on BAT, it would be something that you can actually pick, because BAT, I'm seeing it's already dropped by about just the price change, about 25 shillings. something that's way big. So if an investor would be smart enough on the market, then these are the time when you can now start accumulating those stocks that you probably be buying for long term. So that's one thing that guys can actually try and look at. Also, just to give guys a little bit on the demand and supply for the market, there's demand for 1,500 shares at 400 shillings, and that's 400 shillings per share for BAT. And supply, total supply is 4,800, with a supply starting from 450 shillings per share. This is data that you can always be able to get on the Hisa app. So I guess that was that, Davis. But then also now looking at company-specific performance. Let's maybe start with companies that were in the news last week, starting with Jubilee Insurance.
Okay, so just looking at a quick overview of their results. So they posted a 1.7% growth in after-tax profits. So that grew to 4.1 billion. So it was a bit flat, to be honest. And then the gross earned premiums moved up by 2.4%. Their total income grew by 0.9% to 33.1 billion. And yeah, the operating results of operating activities dipped by 4% to around 3.9 billion. I would say that the company, I find Jubilee Insurance a really good insurance company. While looking at these results, they're not all that good with regard to the underwriting business. I've mentioned this here before a few times. Insurance underwriting is very unprofitable. Okay, so you'll find that loss ratios, so for viewers or listeners who may not understand, a loss ratio is when you take the amounts that's paid out and divided by the net premiums of the company. So, you know, an insurance company gets premiums and then it pays them out depending on the claims that are made, etc. So loss ratios are often quite high for insurance companies. And then when you add expense ratios is when you take operating expenses and then you divide them also by net premiums. When you take these two, you'll get something called a combined ratio, you know, a combination of the two. You'll find that these things are, for a lot of insurance companies, except Kenya Re, from what I've seen in recent years, these ratios tend to be above 100%, which shows that the underwriting business, the actual insurance business, is quite unprofitable. The reason why insurance companies do well is that they move a lot of the gross premiums and invest that money. Unfortunately for our local stock markets, a lot of these insurance companies have been investing in equities. These equities have been underperforming, they're barely getting any dividends and the like, which is affecting the investment income. Jubilee is the outlier of sorts in that majority of the money that it invests is in government securities. You know, there's a lot of stability with regard to their income. They also get rental income and the like, which is, so their investment portfolio is largely different from a large chunk of other insurance companies. Oh, by the way, when the stock market recovers, God willing, it recovers soon, insurance companies will do really well. Just to put that up there. So with regard to Jubilee, I know that they sold some of the shareholding within the company recently. They sold, they entered into an agreement with Allianz SC. That's the largest general insurer in the world. So Allianz is supposed to take a majority stake of between 51% to 66%, while Jubilee will retain a minority. And this is in the general insurance business. So general insurance covers property, casualty, cars, and the like. And to be honest, the general insurance business, especially in those particular line items like property and casualty, the returns tend to be significantly lower. So it's understandable why Jubilee would sell a stake and then focus on their medical business that has higher margins. So we're still yet to see the effects of that deal, but hoping they'll be good going forward. It's a good thing that they're focusing on higher margin business rather than this low margin ones, because again, the underwriting business is quite unprofitable. Unfortunately, to note, the dividend payout ratio, you know, the amount of dividend that's paid out as a percentage of the profit after tax, is quite low. It's around 10%.
Yeah.
So if you love dividends, unfortunately, you may not be doing
the kind of dividend turnovers that guys would really want.
Yeah, it's not the greatest, but the hope is that they're using these retained earnings to buffer up or to beef up their core business, which shareholders are supposed to profit in the long term through share price appreciation. At least that's the hope. Yeah.
Something very interesting, Davis. I know guys are probably wondering, in short, would you be able to just tell guys what are your thoughts on Jubilee? Do you think somebody can buy Jubilee as a company right now on the stock, on the stock market, on the NSE? And also, if guys are wondering, Jubilee is yet to trade on the market, but prices for last week, Jubilee closed at 282.25 on the market per share.
Yeah.
So, Davis, do you think guys could buy? Do you think that it's a good opportunity to buy into Jubilee at this time?
Well, first of all, this is not investment advice. These are merely opinions that we are giving. Personally, I'd say hold. Because honestly, you have to wait to see the outcome of them selling this general business line of insurance to Allianz. You need to see the impact of that, how they optimize the money that's been placed in, how efficient they are at allocating capital and the like, and then see the end result of that. Because it's a bit concerning when you see the underwriting business, you know, doing as high losses as they do. As much as underwriting, honestly, is a really, there are a lot of losses there.
But then the losses are generally raising a little bit of an alarm.
Yeah, those are raising a little bit of an alarm, because another company like Kenya Re, theirs are really low. Their combined ratios should be lower than 70%, if I'm not mistaken. So I would say, well, like, really look into this company. And then depending on how you analyze the future prospects, how you've seen management in their comments give guidance as to the future of the business, how well you think they'll allocate their capital with regard to the medical sector, medical arm of the insurance line. Depending on these factors, you can ascertain whether going forward the company will do really well. But I wouldn't be all too bullish in that particular regard. But these are just my opinions.
All right. Something very interesting, Davis. Maybe another company that we can touch on. I don't know if you really looked at it, but I hear the results were pretty impressive. Could be Flametree as a company. Flametree Group posted, I think, one of the best returns in a while. I think the year last year was pretty good to them. So I don't know if you've really had a look. I personally haven't had a look on Flametree, the results as a company, but you can just let me know what you think if you have had a look. And also, just to tell guys, the share price activity for Flametree wasn't really... didn't raise eyebrows on the market. Despite that, I think also because they did not declare a dividend. What I know is that the company declared returns of about a 64% increase in pre-tax profit to about 148 million. That's from 90.5 million that the company had posted in 2019. So I'm just concerned. These companies like Flametree, that they're making returns, investors are definitely concerned. And for guys who are listening, this is why a lot of guys on the NSE are always looking on dividends. It's because getting capital returns on the market, it's quite a challenge. You definitely need to put in a long-term outlook so that you can be able to put in capital gains.
How long-term is long-term? It could be 50 years.
Long-term. Just know that long-term is long-term. So, because you know, as it's always said, anytime you invest in the stock market, you need to be prepared. You can assume that the market will be shut for the next 20 years, then you get your money back. But also at the same time, there's a lot of, I always, whenever somebody says that, I personally disagree. Because, Davis, this is what I say. I usually say that if I invested in KQ with that same thought, if I invested in ARM with that same mentality, if I invested in Uchumi with that same mentality of investing and forgetting about your investment, oh man.
You'd be drowning in tears right now. And yeah, two companies are not even trading. Hey, Uchumi is on a race to zero. My goodness. Anyway, I understand what you're saying. Actually, that's quite true. So as we mentioned before, you know, investors, you profit in two ways when a company announces results. In the short term, there's a phrase that goes, in the short term, the market is a voting machine, while in the long term, it's a weighing machine. So that phrase means that in the short term, people act on short-term results and the like, while in the long term, the fundamentals of the company are what play out and result in either share price increment or share price decrease. So essentially, in the ideal market, which has good liquidity, which has good pricing mechanisms and the like, and helps to unlock shareholder value, when a company announces good results, you know, in the long run, the share price is supposed to reflect that. In our NSE, as Felix has mentioned, a lot of the times it turns out that investors actually look for dividends, you know, because it seems that's where returns tend to be, especially considering how long we've been in a bear market of sorts, which is unfortunate. But anyway, back to Flametree. So they announced that their revenue went up 20%, 2.9 billion. Their net profit was up 67% to 75.2 million. Their earnings per share were 0.42 shillings. So they didn't announce a dividend, as was mentioned. I haven't really looked at the results all too closely, but if I'm not wrong, the company really does announce, let's say, 1 year profits, 1 year losses, if I'm not mistaken. Really hard to gauge that.
I don't know. I don't know what's really up with companies like Flametree. Maybe. That's why it's so hard to look at it, because you might develop the interest to look at a company. Then you try and do the analysis for the past 5 years, and then it becomes very depressing for you as an analyst. So I personally don't know what we're really looking up to in the long term for Flametree. And I think that's why, because, you know, investors, even if you're having a long-term outlook for a company, you need to be very certain that the company's returns are going to be sort of like get a little bit of an uptrend, even if it's over the next 10 years, but something that's solid, so the fundamentals are promising. For the NSE, on the other hand, companies like Flametree will post a profit of 143 million this year. Next year, they will post a decline, another year profit, and then also at the same time, Flametree, I think, borrowed about 1 billion last year. So them making a profit during the time when COVID hit in. So them making a profit of 143 million. It's like Kenya, as a country borrowing 200 billion and only getting 25 billion in terms of tax revenue. So that's one thing. But
okay, for a listener, tell us, Felix, what does Flametree do? You know, someone could be hearing and be like, I've never heard of this company.
Flametree. Oh my god. Oh my god. So I think Flametree deals with a variety of businesses. Whatever they do is they have a few, it's more like a huge company, but has smaller holding companies that do majorly work in the manufacturing sector.
Yeah.
If you've probably seen these, are they Jojo tanks or these Roto tanks? They're basically products for Flametree. If you probably seen other beauty products like Zoe, Alana Skin, if you probably use in construction, they have Buildmat. So they have a lot of companies that really work in there, sort of like under their the company. So it's a small company, but they've really bought into, either they've bought into these other companies or they've bought a lot into these other small companies. So I don't know, maybe the first thing we need to really understand is what business is Flametree really moving into? How many people are buying tanks, or are we getting guys, are we having a more efficient water supply system in the country? Because those are some of the questions you need to ask yourself. In the next 20 years, will we still be needing plastic tanks everywhere? Because we've actually started seeing guys, even within homesteads, guys are actually moving to the metallic tanks. How often do you just see a truck when you're traveling on the road? How often do you just see a truck carrying tanks? Guys are now moving to piped water back to their homes. So,
yeah,
please, that does not mean that Flametree doesn't have a future. We still know that the cosmetic side is still also trying, but just how many other cosmetic companies are coming here, are coming up on a day-to-day basis. So there's a lot of things that we need to understand.
Yeah, there was a new cosmetic one announced that's actually supposed to list.
It's called what? It's called African Hair.
Yeah,
African
Hair.
African Hair. I don't know. I don't know what African Hair really does.
Let me guess. They, you know, do African Hair.
Because I don't know. Maybe they do African Hair. I wouldn't want to comment on African Hair because what I know is that they said last week that they would be coming into the NSE. They want to list on the NSE. But it really, you know, one thing that I've really said is companies like African Hair that want to list on the NSE, they need to really understand that investors on the NSE are not like, we're not as dumb as we used to be, just so to speak. So I'm sorry, let me just say it. Let me say this as harsh as it may sound. Investors on the NSE are not as dumb as we used to be. We've been hurt on IPOs and we're not willing to get hurt in any other IPO. So African Hair, if you come in and list any company, African Hair, I know it's a Danish company, but...
Yeah, waiting for their prospectus to come out. So
let's wait for their prospectus.
Who knows? You know, it might be, you know, something amazing. Hey, let's not assume it. Anyway, we should move on.
Oh man, I think that's something very interesting. Anyway, we'll wait for you guys there once again. If you come down, we'll also just continue waiting for you the same way we're waiting for Homeboys to come to the market. Man, when is Homeboys supposed to start trading?
Trading.
I think we're waiting for Homeboys to start trading in the next quarter. For the shares to start trading, because we've had Homeboys listed on the market at 4.66 with a valuation of 250 million. Oh man, we'll wait once again. This is not an investment advice. I might be saying oh man and I'm waiting to buy or I'm waiting to sell, but you can buy and sell, yeah. Make some profit. But that's one thing that we'll be able to also just generally have a look at. So, guys, just to also once again touch on a few things. Davis, there are a few companies that maybe we would just want to mention. I know guys are waiting for the main three companies. We've already talked about Jubilee, BAT. So I know guys are waiting for Safaricom, KCB, and Equity as usual. But before we get into that, Davis, last week we saw Transcentury Limited as a company. It's interesting that on Monday we were actually talking about Transcentury and East African Cables.
Yeah.
Transcentury moved up about 18%, giving guys about, generally, from 103 to 122 in share price activity. But then at the same time, we also saw on the loser side, Can General drop by about 10% to 21 shillings and 60 cents. I don't know what your thoughts are, but as you look onto TCL, what I'd want to mention about Can General is it's interesting for Can General, just for everybody to really understand, Can General really had small volumes traded last week. Some of these companies, what we need to start understanding on the market is that most of these companies that trade on the market, they basically move huge percentages, but it's because of the share price activity and the volumes. For Can General, for instance, you'll find that about 400 shares traded last week. But you might just be wondering, why has it gone down 10%? It's just because maybe somebody didn't have an opportunity, a good sell or buy opportunity. So they decided to just come in and just sell at whichever price they can be able to manage.
Looking for an easy exit. Yeah, I'm always cautious, especially when I look at companies that are trading this low. You know, looking at Transcentury, the year-to-date performance, they're down almost 16%, as much as in the week they gained 18%. Well, but looking at the share price, honestly, and considering that there hasn't been significant information as pertains to the company, I would say that this is a lot of speculation. So you enter for the short term, possibly when you do your technical analysis, you see that the company has been oversold, you enter a position and you exit quickly. May not be something of significance. And I'd really discourage people from doing such trades, because it cuts both ways, honestly. You can you can enter with the mindset of, you know, this thing has dropped, it's now trading at one, that thing could drop to zero. The company can announce bankruptcy tomorrow, honestly. You know, I really never understand this mindset of, let's say a company like BAT is trading at 400, that means, of course, to buy 100 shares, you need 40,000. That is not expensive. Buying a share that's trading at, let's say, 5, and the company prospects are horrible, it's just declining. Yes, you're spending less money, but you're losing in the long term. Like, if the company continues to lose value, you know, drops in share price, etc., I wouldn't suggest that people enter our market, especially with speculation in mind, but rather with the aim to invest for the long term. Especially when you consider our trading costs, you know, you have to make 4 to 5% just to break even with regard to trading costs alone. It really doesn't make sense to enter short-term positions and exit, though I could be wrong. You know, there are those who possibly profit in this. Even though statistically speaking, short-term traders, is it 80% of them who usually fail? Like worldwide?
I honestly, I think maybe just in my honest opinion, I usually tell guys who come and ask me for advice on trading that if you're looking to invest on the market and going with a short-term perspective, there's a 99% chance that you will actually lose. So I always tell guys, when you're coming into the market, there are short-term gains. Yes, there's an opportunity. There's usually a possibility of you getting a short-term gain, but let it come on its own. Don't try and outdo the market. So I've seen a lot of guys out here tell guys, oh no, you know, you can actually make 100% within 1 year on the market. I'll pick for you guys stocks. Let me tell you guys today that unless you actually have inside information, you can never tell which way a stock is going to go. I'm telling you guys that as an open advice so that you can know at any point before you invest, always buy even fundamentally stable stocks. You can buy Safcom today at 38 and tomorrow it will close at 37, while at the same time you're hoping. So in the long run, if it's fundamentally stable, you know that in the long run the fundamentals will always catch up. That would mean a positive gain on price. But if it's short term and you think you can make some 50% like we see guys do on Wall Street.
Yeah, and actually globally speaking, I remember I was reading an article recently that actually advocated that you shouldn't try to beat the market. You can imagine that majority of fund managers don't actually beat the market. This is now using the S&P 500 as a reference point. So it's better to actually be an index investor, to invest in the entirety of the market, even though index investing now comes with a lot of risk considering the concentration on particular portfolios. But anyway, that's another discussion. So it's better to actually invest in the entirety of the market, move with the market as the market goes with the economy, etc., rather than imagining that you have like your laptop and everything, you're ready to go. There's a fund manager out there with teams of people and analysts and the like. They are looking at the stock market 24/7 and they're trying to get, you know, the 10% returns. Then you imagine you can beat them and still the market beats them, majority of them, on a statistical basis. It really is unlikely.
It's usually said that in the end the house always wins.
Yeah.
So guys, and the house is never the fund market, the fund managers or you. At any point the house is the person who's going on the opposite side. So always just do your in-depth analysis, do your fundamental investing, but always don't get into the market with a short-term outlook. As an investor and as an investment banker as well, usually what I tell guys is if you're coming into the market and you know very well that you're looking into holding that money for less than 1 year, I won't lie to you that we can be able to make things change. But nevertheless, guys have made money. There are guys who bought Nairobi Business Ventures, not knowing that it would come back trading at 5 shillings.
Yeah.
I know a few guys who bought about 100 shares and it came back trading at 5 shillings and 55 cents before the end of last year. So yes, sometimes you can make these returns, but just as we mentioned, have that long-term outlook. But also at the same time, just get to really understand that these are not guaranteed returns, mostly on the market. unlike bonds, where you really have data for bonds, you know that the coupon rates or money market funds, markets are, okay, I wouldn't say the word, but markets are a mess. But at times, markets are really good. I know I'm saying things that, oh man, sorry guys. But then, so Davis, maybe one thing that we can also touch into that guys are really interested in is last week we saw a lot of activity on Safaricom. Safaricom last week held, and I think it's becoming a little bit of a cliche, where every Monday we have to say that Safaricom had more than 50% in terms of trading on the market.
But it's the truth, isn't it? I mean, that's where all the money goes. Okay, a lot of money goes, large funds tend to hold. Actually, there's a report that came out recently with regard to what public entities hold, you know, so NSSF and the like. A lot of it, you know, is just government securities and equities. Equities, of course, are focused on the five stocks.
Five so companies.
The five companies, Safaricom, Equity, KCB. Just know them off.
Oh my God. EABL, BAT.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But last week, Safaricom had about 51.2%. That's generally, just as we always say, Safaricom had more than 50% in terms of the total week's traded value. Safcom closed the week a bit higher, 5.79% at 38 shillings and 40 cents. That's from 36 shillings and 30 cents where it had closed down last week. So the turnover for the market, just so that you understand, the turnover for the market last week, the total turnover was 2.3 billion and Safcom traded 1.2 billion.
Wow. It's quite significant.
And then looking at it in terms of activity, general foreign activity, we're still seeing foreign investors taking advantage, because the whole of last week, on Monday, foreign investors held about 55.9% of the total market participation. On Tuesday, 78%. On Wednesday, 55% again. 73% on Thursday, and then on Friday we are seeing about 65%. And for you guys to really understand just how foreign statistics really work is that when foreigners are not in our market, our turnover is very low.
Mm.
An example is when the market turnover was on Monday, when foreign activity was at 55.9%, our market turnover was very low, at about 394 million. And I would explain to you guys what it really means when we have a turnover of less than a billion on the market. Really, to just explain, is that our market, the total overall activity, and generally also to explain how investment banks would also be able to be hit when market activity is low, is you find that when foreign or fund managers give you an order to make on the market, they will always give you both the buy side and the sell side. So if our market turnover is at about 394 and we're seeing foreign participation on that day, foreigners took about 220 million. So that means if even they came in and took 200 million and gave to just one broker to do what we call a cross trade on the market, then they've basically left our other 22 brokers to all compete for fairly about 194 million.
Yeah.
If another guy came, if a fund manager who is now a local individual came into the market with 50 million or 100 million, they've actually left 21 brokers on the market to compete for about 94 million. So I think,
it's
man,
really foreign denominated.
Yeah, so the foreign market. The foreign investors really are taking advantage, and I think local investors are not taking advantage of the market as well, because our local investors, first of all, we are always looking for stocks that are trading at lower prices. If it's these ones that are trading at a higher prices, we always feel like we've been hit onto them.
Yeah, and then also investor education is a real issue in Kenya. I know 10%, less than 10% of the population actually invests in stocks, statistically speaking, which is unfortunate. I think we need to invest more in investor education.
But you know, Davis, not really, I don't really mean to hit on the NSE with this, but last week we saw that the NSE is actually charging guys to train you. The NSE is charging to tell you what a stock is. The NSE would charge you. And I saw that one. Somebody had actually challenged the NSE. I hope they'll take action to it. But on the other sources, I think it really needs to start with the NSE. I'd really want to mention that I've seen a few companies, mostly investment banks. I've seen both NCBA and Ganges Capital really pick up on investor education actively, doing almost week-to-week webinars. I think that's something that's been good. But also not to mention, we're seeing HISA doing a lot of investor education, like what we're doing today, purely investor education, and it's for free. So that's one thing I'm really hoping that we'll be able to just have a look into in the end. So, Safaricom Davis, just as we're speaking, do you think that Safcom would likely continue this up climb in terms of share price?
Yes, of course. As usual, its long-term fundamentals haven't changed significantly. The only thing you'd ever actually be concerned about is if they're forced to spin off the M-Pesa division, or if Airtel takes up more market share in light of the company being forced to share its infrastructure. I saw a report that was tabled actually in that particular regard, that infrastructure is supposed to be set up such that, no, legislation is supposed to be set up such that Safaricom can share its infrastructure. If that happens, that would mean that more people are likely to move to Airtel because, you know, lower costs and the like. It might actually force Safaricom to reduce their prices, which would be good for consumers. It would be bad for capitalists because now, you know, they've set up the infrastructure, then you're forcing the company to share it with others, which is not the greatest. But consumers would really profit. Safcom itself would likely lose market share. They've actually been losing a lot. Not that much, but they've lost. Airtel commanded around 17% of the market. Now they command around 27%. So if they're forced to share infrastructure, Airtel, it would likely become a duopoly at some point.
But then
that hasn't happened yet. So
I think in my opinion, Davis, I think that shouldn't happen, man.
Yeah.
It's like building your homestead and then you're being given guys
to come live there.
Yeah, to generally, you're now being told to just give guys your house. You start giving guys rooms. Yes, Eric.
Interesting discussion. It feels like today you guys are on a rant. You're not sparing anyone. Anyway, on matters Safcom, I also feel like, and especially on Airtel, I think a few things might work in Airtel's favor slightly, you know, in the short to midterm. I think their merger with Telkom might still be back on, given that ESCC cleared them, although they have not formally announced that they are going back to the table. But I feel like even the infrastructure sharing, that legislation, I don't think it will do them eventually much good, because even at the moment there is mobile money interoperability, but they haven't really used it, you know, as people thought that it would actually make people adopt Airtel Money more. Yes, there's about, I think the report said about 170,000 agents now use, Safaricom agents actually now, you know, transact Airtel transactions due to that law. But we haven't seen really Airtel's money or Telkom, you know, T-Cash, that percentage of market share in mobile money rise, because I think Safaricom still controls 98%. So yes, the infrastructure might be a boost in the short term, but I feel like Airtel's best bet is the merger with Telkom for two reasons. First, because Telkom actually has very good infrastructure. In Nairobi, yes, if you look at even their 4G, is quite, you know, much better than Airtel, so that might actually boost them. And even countrywide, Telkom actually has average and better network than Airtel, so that might play to their advantage. And also the other thing that then at least them together, they would actually own some 34% market share, which would be half of what Safaricom currently have. So again, it would actually elevate them to competing status. And if there isn't government directive for Airtel to sell at least 30% of their shareholding, if they are able to get, you know, a very good or strategic partner to take up that shareholding and actually drive the vision, I feel like they could finally be able to at least challenge Safaricom both on voice data and maybe eventually on mobile money.
Okay.
Jackson, thanks a lot for the contribution. Let me just ask you one question. Do you still see Safaricom as being, do you still see Safaricom from the same angle as it's being looked at right now or in the next 5 years?
I know we disagree with Davis on this, but for me personally, I see Safaricom spinning off M-Pesa within the next 3 years. And Davis, again, this is not a it's not a bad thing for shareholders. I feel like Safaricom as a telco is much would be forced to be innovative. They would definitely have to get the Ethiopian license. They might actually venture out of Kenya to set up telco facilities, you know, in countries around, and that might be a good thing. Eventually, of course, their balance sheet would take a huge hit when M-Pesa, you know, is spinned off. But I think in the midterm, in year 4 or 5, they recover that and actually become a strong company, a strong telco company. And then the other thing is I see now M-Pesa, you know, the spin-off, you know, being a strong fintech player that can then play across the continent. Because actually, did you know that M-Pesa is actually live in 86 countries? Yeah, so just that fact only, you know, already tells you that Safaricom or M-Pesa is actually sort of like a sleeping giant, because if they really didn't have all that baggage of the telecom, the government's tech, Vodacom's tech, you know, pulling them down, they could actually be more agile to then be a fintech company that has footprint in much more countries than just Kenya.
Yeah, actually, like that perspective. And I do, to a large extent, agree with you. The problem actually Safaricom faces, if it were to try to expand outside Kenya more, would be Vodacom or Vodafone, one of those. The larger entity can...
Vodafone,
yeah. So the larger entity is unlikely to allow such vast expansion for the smaller company. That's why they do mostly what joint ventures like M-Pesa Global. I know Safaricom owns 50% of it. Vodafone owns the other 50%. With regard to the Ethiopian, with regard to Ethiopia, I know Safaricom is taking majority, even though they are moving as a, not a conglomerate, what is it called? Okay, they're moving as a group of companies in that particular regard. So if M-Pesa were to be spun off, and honestly, looking at Safaricom financials, M-Pesa Global was their driving factor. Revenues, as is kind of obvious, when a company, you know, goes through, is it 4 stages? So there's that early stage, and then there's the growth stage, and then now there's the maturity stage, and then now there's decline. At decline, you need to now start, what's it called? You need to now start adapting to the environment. You now need to look into new business lines and the like. And all things considered, while that move would force Safaricom to really innovate, I really do struggle in seeing markets that they can be innovative in other than the Ethiopia, because of the, let's call it, oversight by Vodafone, which is now, you know, in more countries than Safcom, and it will stay as such. Going
forward. So just to clarify to guys, it's actually Vodacom.
Oh, it's
not
Vodacom.
Yeah, not. It's like, they're usually confusing. Yeah, so Vodafone used to hold the majority stake back then, and then they moved it to Vodacom. So I know that that's one thing. So, guys, I know we've been here for a very long time. We've been here for some time today. Maybe as we conclude, I know we've talked about SAFCOM, and just to give guys an insight, SAFCOM has had a... Okay, I don't know if there's somebody... So generally, just to tell guys how the company is trading right now, and you can always be able to check this. You can be able to check this data through the HISA app. I'm seeing SAFCOM as a company has traded at a price today, trading at about 38 on the market. We are seeing demand at about 712,000 and supply at 396,000. That's total. So that means if you want to buy SAFCOM right now, you can buy them at 38 shillings, but the offers, the demand is slightly lower. At about a stable demand is at 37.8 shillings. And I'm also seeing Kathy is saying with a 52-week trading range of 25.95 and 39.9 generally. And I think this is up to Davis. What would be the best entry point for SAFCOM?
Yeah, it really does depend on, do you value Safaricom as a telecommunications company or as a what?
As a money transfer service. You know,
it depends on how you value it, because people have been saying it's overvalued since it was like at 19 or something, yeah. And now look, it's at 39. There's a lot of noise out there. Yeah, so do you value it as a tech company? Do you value it as a telecom company? It really... does depend. I need to look at the charts to see, you know, if rather a pullback is imminent or anything, because it seems like no matter what happens, the company just keeps on going up. You know, in a bear market, it still goes up. There's a global pandemic, it still goes up. So, yeah.
Guys react, but then we investors will overreact. I know as we look onto the insurance sector, we'll take an in-depth look next week. I'm seeing there's a file that has been shared, and I know Davis will have a look at it, and we can be able to have a discussion on that next week. Finally, as we end today's session, as we start wrapping up, I'll just share with you guys a few insights. You can always get data that I share with you through the HISA app, and even the recordings for podcasts like this one, you'll be able to get it later on the HISA app. I'm seeing Equity Bank, which we had mentioned earlier on, is trading at a considerable discount, in my opinion. Equity's demand is 510,000 and supply is 226,000. Equity Bank currently is trading at a price of a stable demand is at 38.55. So generally, when we mention a stable demand or a stable supply, that means generally where the bulk of the demand or where the bulk of the supply is at. So usually as what I would tell you is whenever there's a stable supply at a certain price, you can either bid with them or bid just slightly above that price. An example is if Equity Bank is trading at a price of 38 shillings and 55 cents, if you wanted to buy Equity Bank today on the market, don't get in and buy it at 38 shillings and 95 where the supply is. You can always bid on the market, and this is what I know. When touch on public education, this is where local investors really also miss out. Is most of us usually want to buy on the market. Very few of us would bid on the market, and also some of us would always bid way too low. An example is if Equity is trading at 38 shillings and 95 cents, why would you go and bid at 36 shillings? Surely.
So you have a long term view.
Okay.
You're waiting for it to drop even more significantly.
Oh,
who knows? With the dividend drought and everything.
Yeah. But I think you can, if the stable supply is at stable demand is at 38 shillings and 55 cents, you can bid at 38.50 or you can bid at 38.60, where some investors have just put their bids right now. On the other side, on supply is spread out quite evenly. We are seeing supply from 38 shillings and 95 cents, and also some supply at 39, then 39.50, all the way to 40. But then the greatest supply today on Equity Bank is at 42 shillings and 50 cents. And just to tell guys, considering the margins that we have on our market, unless something really happens, something big really happens, for Equity Bank to move from 38 shillings to 42 shillings,
I'm guessing they have that mindset because Equity and KCB tend to move together, and KCB is currently trading at 42.
All right, so yeah, actually.
Yeah, and also, sorry to cut Felix off.
It's okay.
A bit short. We have some, you know, results that we're looking forward to. Unfortunately, we don't normally have a calendar of sorts that shows this company is announcing results on this date, this one on this date. But notable companies are like Bamburi. I'd expect them to release the results this week, maybe the one after, so we can have a look at that. Also, waiting on Nation Media. Those will be quite interesting results. And then,
I know Erika Suma is really, really waiting for Nation Media.
Yeah. And others like Pritam.
Yes, Jackson.
But I know the event section is one that we are closely monitoring on HISA. And I think given the new update that you have, you know, early testing, the lucky ones already has the upcoming events and all. So that should be something that would be accessible to everyone now going forward, Davis.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll actually share with guys a little bit of a snip of what we are working on here, for which should be up within the next few weeks.
Okay. So since we've been here for over an hour, I hope we haven't bored you guys. Hey, tell us on the chat.
It's always interesting. But I'm seeing today we have guys. It's also, I know Monday is also very tricky with guys at work and everything. It becomes a little bit of a challenge. But also for you guys, just to give you a final overview, we've mentioned about KCB. Demand for KCB is at 273, and you guys don't want to guess the supply. The supply for KCB is at a cool 1.01 million, the supply. So I think KCB, with such kind of information, knowing the total demand on one side and total supply on one side, it's actually scary. So that's one thing. But let's really hope that KCB doesn't come down to meet Equity. So if you're always backing your Equity sentiments on KCB, it would really be interesting just for you as an individual to just have an overview of what KCB investors probably are also having a same sentiment and referring to Equity as a benchmark. If you're hoping that Equity Bank is likely to move from 38 to 42 where KCB is trading at, then Davis, how about KCB investors who are at 42 and they're scared that KCB will come down rallying
down to Equity
to 38? Right. So those are just various scenarios you can always get to look into on the market. But let's really hope that this will be able to have a turnaround generally as markets move. So I believe that's it, everybody. If you have any question or any comment, please feel free, share it with us on the comment section. On the app, at below every podcast, there is a comment section where you can just tell us your concerns on every podcast. And then also for those of you who are with us on the Investors Open Room on Telegram, please always feel free and just let us know your thoughts on the session.
Yeah.
Also, don't forget to get HISA app on your, just get the HISA app. If you have the app and you haven't signed up, just sign up. It will open a lot of other opportunities and other features as well to you on the markets. So thank you all and have a lovely week ahead.